Spiritual Life Center. Transforming lives as we love, serve, and remember who we are.
One heart.
We greet you in the name of all that is good, all that is sacred, and in the warm and loving energy of this community, Spiritual Life Center. If you're joining us for the first time, we especially want to welcome you because we know that you are not here by accident. You're here by divine appointment. Thank you for joining us on your unique path today, and we hope you enjoy this special message from this past Sunday's service.
Faith in Action, Community Book Study, Week 4. How are we doing? There's a, pardon?
We're green.
That means go, right? So we can go in the next 3 weeks. After the staff decides on the Faith in Action book, Paul and I read it. And then she's really, really good at coming up with the key ideas. So she comes up with the key ideas, and then we meet, and then she writes, like, she came up with all of the talk titles this year, and then I write the workbook, and I do the affirmations. And mostly, we're looking for a book that will help us have, you know, good talk titles and stuff to work with. This time, there's so much material, there's so many things in this book to work with, we're all like, which one do I choose? And so it's been in kind of an interesting challenge the other direction. And when I saw this title, the first thing I thought about was one of those big bouncy houses, you know, that people get for birthday parties and things. And I thought, I don't know there's anything I can do with that, and I'm not sure that I can, so I'm just telling you that that's a picture I had in my head, and I'm going to just put the bouncy house over here for a few minutes. But I also, when I was reading about resilience, I realized that I am apparently a really incredibly resilient person. And I never really thought about it. It's just that's how I do my life. And I know other people who, when something hits them, it just flattens them. And I learned over the years not to judge them. It's like, well, I can do this, why can't you? Because we're all different, right? But I finally realized after reading this that I've mostly put it down to the fact that I have a short attention span. And so, so when I get mired in something, I'll do it for a little while and then just go, this is stupid. I don't want to do this anymore. And that's just my personality. And then after reading this some more, I thought, well, perhaps some of this comes from the way I grew up, because there were lots of opportunities to be resilient in my childhood. And then there's my, then there's this personality, and then there's my, all of my new thought spiritual practice. So coming together, it really does help me work through things. And then I watch people who have not had, whether for whatever reason, don't have quite the same, what is it, reserve perhaps is a good word. And I realize that this is why Brené Brown is writing this to us and telling us, is because resilience is something that you can cultivate. It is something that you can and can bring into your life. She says that the traits that resilient people have are many, but the ones that stand out for me are spirituality and hope. We'd be here for 3 hours if I talked about all of them anyway. But, you know, they're the key aspects. And spirituality, by her definition, is connection. Simple connection. It's being connected to something stronger, something bigger, something that is constant and that never changes. And it's that's the thing that always brings me back to my center, because even if I'm in the middle of some OMG situation, there's part of me that knows that there's something that is unchanging. But so the question, I suppose, is how do you do that when you feel like the world is coming down around you and you feel like life will never be the same? You know, people say, it's ruined my life. And what do you do when you feel like that? Well, I know from personal experience that when a person is in the throes of catastrophe, walking up and saying, oh, just go to God, it's just that doesn't work. because the reason they're in catastrophe or in crisis in the first place is because they're feeling disconnected. And it's not really possible to just go, oh, I feel connected again. That's not how it works. Ping, you know, we don't have the little fairy with the magic wand. So when someone dies or when there's an accident or a financial crisis feels like it's crushing you, your sense of connection is usually the first thing to go. And so that's natural. So knowing that, oh, this is what happens when I'm in crisis, can go a long way towards not feeling like you've been abandoned by God. And we live in a material world, and that materialness is really important. You know, there's a lot of people who say, well, there's a material world and it's not real, and it does matter. It matters a lot because this is how what we're doing here and now, and this is how we live. Now, we also need the spiritual side, and really the challenge is all about balance, is how do I walk my life with both feet, one foot, you know, in spirituality and the other in the material world, and how do I keep that balance? One of the ways to restore that balance is hope, and she talks a lot about hope in the book. She says hope is not an emotion, it is a way of thinking. It's a combination of setting goals. It is having the tenacity and perseverance to pursue them and believing in our own abilities. I take hope one step farther because it is also the belief, the thought process, the spiritual system of knowing that there is something here and now within you that is spiritual, that is bigger than you, that is here no matter what. That's what hope really is. And it's there even when you're so mired in grief and, oh my God, that you can't even feel it. And it's a process. Hope is a process. It's not just, again, not no just ping, there it is. And it's not just tossing something aside and deciding, oh, it's all better now. One of the things that we tend to get into, or we can get into in our teaching is the something that we call a spiritual bypass. Which means something really horrendous has happened and you go, okay, it's all good. And it's one thing to say, there's something good that can come out of this. And there's another thing is saying, just proclaiming it all good and not dealing with it. Someone shared a story with me that she worked for a woman who told her this just horrendous story that had happened to the woman years ago. And then she said, but it was really good. And my friend said, no, it wasn't good. It was awful. It was painful. It was all these things. However, some good came out of it. And can you see the difference between that? And so the spiritual bypass is something that is really easy to try to do because we don't want to deal with those feelings sometimes. But if we can stop and feel those feelings, then we have a much better chance of working through them. So the other day, I had an interesting experience at the Quick Quack Car Wash. You find spiritual lessons in the most interesting places, don't you? So I drove up. It was really busy. How many people have been to a Quick Quack? Okay. So there were two lanes going up, and there was one person, and they employ almost, I don't know if they're teenagers or college students, but they're young people. And there was only one attendant, and she was going back and forth between the cars, doing a really good job of keeping up with it. And then a coworker walked out, and they had a conversation, and I knew it was a conversation because I could tell the way they were talking to each other. And the other person walked away, and the attendant was kind of shaking her head, and she walked over to me. And I smiled at her, and I said, breathe. And she actually did take a breath, and we did our transaction, and then she said, I'm the only one here, so please wait for me. So I went around. Now, for those of you who haven't been to a Quick Quack, the driveway going around to go into the car wash is really narrow, and it's a very sharp turn. I think they must try to keep the smallest footprint for that they can. And so I went around, and I lined my car up. There was nobody behind me, even, and probably because she was so trying to keep up. But I came up and I lined up, and all of the things were whirring and flopping, and the, you know, all of that stuff that happens. And then as I pulled up right in line, it all just stopped. No, I wasn't in it yet, but it all just stopped, and I was sitting there at the entrance to the car wash, looking all the way through the end, knowing that here I was, I had no option but to go through, because you can't back up, and I could see all the way through to the end of the tunnel. And then she walked over, she pressed a button, and everything came back up, whirling and spinning, and what, you know, and then the rail hooked onto my car and started pulling me through. I was really committed then. No chance of getting out. And so there's water coming on, and there's soap, and there's the things flopping, and there's noise, and it's overriding my radio, and I'm turning the radio up, but I also was just sitting there thinking, okay, I'm safe, I'm protected, and in this case, I knew what the outcome, or at least I was pretty sure I knew what the outcome would be, that I would come out the other end with a nice clean car. But I just kept thinking about this storm that was going around me. And here I was encased in this car, and yeah, I just wanted to be more poetic. But anyway, in this car, and you know, it came out, and then the air blows and sort of kind of dries your car, and then you come out, and there's these little lights, and they say go, or duck, duck, and then the green one has a go, and then OOS, so it's duck, duck, goose, and the green light comes on, and I came out. And I weathered, you know, I weathered that experience, but I just drove away thinking that is so much how life can be. And not, you're not always standing there looking and knowing that you're walking into it. But there was all of these different things. I mean, because the things twirl like this, and they twirl like this, and they flop. And it's like, yeah, it seems like chaos. But it just really got me to thinking about what we do when we are trying to weather something. And sometimes we feel really lost. In this case, of course, I didn't, because it was a very controlled environment. But sometimes we do feel lost. And I was remembering there is this great line. It's about the only thing I remember from the movie Jeremiah Johnson. And there's a character named Bear Claw. And he and Jeremiah Johnson are out in the wilderness. And Jeremiah Johnson's going, "We're lost, we're lost." And he's all freaking out. And Bear Claw says, "No, sir, we are not lost. We may be mighty confused, but we are not lost." But there are times when we do feel lost, and that is why resilience is such an important ability to cultivate. One of the things that gets in the way of resilience is all of that stuff we put on ourselves about, I should resolve it now, I'm a metaphysician, I shouldn't have gotten myself into this in the first place. We're so hard on ourselves, and we have such high expectations of ourselves, when really, honestly, we are always doing the best we can in any one moment. And then we need to also realize that hope doesn't just pop up out of immediately. Even for those of us who are born to annoy the pessimists, even for us, there will be moments of feeling utterly confused and perhaps lost. And this is where Brown's advice about taking a break is so marvelous, because when you can step back, when you can stop, I mean, it may be sitting down to watch a movie, it may be going to take a walk, it may just be stopping and sitting and being with it, but when you can do that, you give yourself space. You give the situation time to settle, and you stop working it so hard that you can't, you know, I mean, when you're working at something so hard, there's no way you can come up with any solutions or see any other way of doing it. And so just taking the break can help you just, if nothing else, you might not be able to change the actual situation, but you can change your approach to the situation. And that might, again, be just a stepping back. And it's a way to find a way back to our sense of connection. Taking that break. And maybe that connection is only with one other person, or it might be with your cat or your dog or your fish or your plants in the backyard. Connection to anything will help. It will help bring you back to your center. Connection is not feeling alone. It's knowing that there is someone or something that supports you no matter what. And yeah, I do think it's possible to regain connection in reading a book or watching a movie, because when you are engaged in that, you're engaged with those characters. You'd have to be, or you won't finish the book, the movie or the book. You'll just walk away from it. So you're engaged with something that is giving you something back. And so this is the process of allowing hope to float up into your consciousness. And the hope might be a thin thread. But if you grab onto that little thread, it will pull you along until it becomes bigger and bigger, until it's a rope to help you float up into light. And with that light, a sense of joy might start to arise. Now, understanding joy is another thing. Joy is not being giddily happy all the time. It's not skipping down the lane in spite of everything. It does not necessarily mean that we're unbelievably happy. Joy is internal. It comes from a sense of connectedness. And Brown says that joy and gratitude are spiritual practices. They are bound to a belief in human interconnectedness and a power greater than us. Hope is a spiritual practice. Joy is a spiritual practice. Has anybody here heard of Brother Lawrence? Brother Lawrence wrote in the 17th century, he was a monk, and he worked in the kitchen. He had been, a soldier, and he came to this monastery, and he worked in the kitchen, and he peeled potatoes, and he cleaned. I mean, he did the things that most of us might consider to be menial jobs, and he wrote about all of the joy and the contentment he felt in what he was doing. And the book is called A Practice of the Presence, and so he practiced the presence of the divine in everything that he did. And then there's another book. It's called The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula Le Guin. Some people have read that, I can tell. There's a long section in this book where two men are crossing a frozen tundra. They are not necessarily friends, and they're not necessarily enemies. They're not quite sure who they even are to each other, but here they are in this situation. And the climate is brutal, the landscape is brutal. They calculated their supplies to last an exact number of days. And of course, there were delays. But this is what one of the characters writes or says. "I am not trying to say that I was happy during those weeks of hauling a sledge across an ice sheet in the dead of winter. I was hungry, overstrained, and often anxious. And it all got worse the longer it went on. I certainly wasn't happy. Happiness has to do with reason, and reason earns it. What I was given was a thing you can't earn, can't keep, and often don't even recognize at the time. I mean joy." So in the story, this character's entire activity was survival. That's what they were doing, was just staying alive, trying to get across this tundra. But he woke in their small tent. They were both still alive. He'd make a simple cup of coffee, and he felt connected, and he still felt joy within. And so it may seem counterintuitive, but it's possible to have experienced joy and gratitude even when you are in the throe of the biggest OMG in the world. Because what he says is that happiness has to do with reason. And Brown says almost exactly the same thing, that happiness is tied to circumstances, while joyfulness emerges from spirit and gratitude. And many of us miss these small moments, because when we're in the middle of something, we're so busy being miserable and hanging on to that misery that, you know, and maybe we don't think it's acceptable to have a little bit of joy and laughter in the midst of whatever's going on. I think that's a cultural thing with us. Now, I don't know how many people have someone pass in the family, and it's just so incredibly serious all the time, and if anybody laughs or makes a joke, the people are really uncomfortable. When my mother died in 1984, we had been, my sister and I had been making trips back and forth to Phoenix. We lived in different parts of the country. And I was in Utah when my mom died, and my sister was with her. And so I flew back to Phoenix. And I remember coming down the escalator, and she just looked at me, and she says, "We've got to stop meeting like this." That's my family's way of dealing with these sorts of things, is that, and maybe that's one of the other reasons I'm resilient, is because of that sense of humor. But there's something that says to us, it's inappropriate to make a joke or to laugh or even feel any kind of joy because this horrible, awful thing is going on. But sometimes when you can introduce a little bit of humor into this thing, it helps dissipate, and it helps to what? Spark a little bit of hope, a little bit of joy, a little bit of, it doesn't have to stay this way. You know, sometimes we do experience instant healing, instant resolution, instant relief. But mostly those things happen when we put one foot in front of the other. Resilience, hope, gratitude, joy all come through spiritual practice. And spiritual practice is something that we will always be, well, practicing. It's not, there's no destination. And we will never be permanently joyful, permanently hopeful, permanently grateful. We will also never be permanently miserable, permanently unhappy, permanently confused. None of it's permanent. It's all changing. And the only thing that is permanent is the unchanging divine within each one of us. Life is a process. It is amazing, confusing, wonderful. It's a process with ups and downs and some sideways things going on too. It just is. And when we give ourselves permission to be who we are in this moment and accept that this is what we're doing, we're being human, and it's totally okay to be human, then the spiritual practice becomes a conscious choice to improve your inner self, to become more aware of who you are. This is a way to expand your consciousness, to allow your own light to shine in the world, and to give yourself permission to be. Oscar Wilde said, "Be yourself, everybody else is taken." So there is no special skill required, because being you is who you came here to be. And yet we are doing all these things to learn how to be who we are. So when I bring my thoughts back to that bouncy house, we can bring it back into the thing now. The bouncy house, I really couldn't see much I could use in the talk, but then the more I thought about it, it's like when you go in and you start to bounce, you start to go up into the air, and then you start to feel free. And then hope rises, just like hope would rise. And then maybe you come down, and I'm sure that I've never been in one, but I'm sure it's kind of wiggly, and you lay there and just really quietly just be with whatever has been happening, and then you just might deep inside feel joy burst forth. And honestly, folks, what more could you ask for?
We are grateful for the opportunity to share with you today and hope you've taken something from this Sunday's message. If you'd like to hear more from Spiritual Life Center, be sure to click subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening from. You can find out more about our community on our website at www.slcworld.org. We look forward to being a part of your continued spiritual journey. Wherever you are, God is, and all is well.
Spiritual Life Center.